News Talk 590 WPLK. Scott Johnson sitting in for Jack Patty on this Forensic Friday. Brought to you this morning by Landscaper's Corner at 1305 Old Frankfort Pike in Lexington. Landscaper's Corner has Triple Crown Elite Grass Seed, the seed everybody's talking about. Call Landscaper's Corner at 225-9433. And as we do every Friday for American DA Live, we say good morning to Fayette County Common Law's Attorney Ray Larson. Welcome back.
Thanks, Scott. I appreciate it.
Why don't you introduce our guest this morning?
Well, Rick Bartley is the Commonwealth Attorney in Pike County and has been the prosecutor up, the felony prosecutor up there for lots of years, and is a good friend of mine. And we really love to have Rick on the show because he has such a way of telling a story about cases. And today I don't believe is going to be any different. Rick is, we're going to talk about two cases, and any rate, we'll get to those cases in a minute. Rick, welcome.
Well, good morning, Ray. Good morning, Scott. Good morning, everybody else. Glad to be with you guys this morning.
Sure, glad to have you on with us, Rick.
The, before we go any further, let's acquaint people with your jurisdiction, the far eastern part of Kentucky.
Well, I'm the Commonwealth Attorney in Pike County, and what we actually call it the 35th Judicial Circuit, which is only Pike County. I've been the Commonwealth Attorney here now going on 13 years, and I was an assistant here for former Commonwealth Attorney John Paul Runyon, well-known to people all across the state and certainly well-known to you, Ray.
Yep.
So John Paul helped train me a lot, and then whenever he retired, I ran for his office. And so I've got about 23 years of prosecuting in now and really enjoying it.
Well, Rick does a great job up there, and I asked him if he would be willing to be on the program again. He'd been on a number of times, and to think of some interesting cases, and he always has interesting cases. And as we talked about the cases that he wanted to talk about, one of them is called the Torso Murder Case, which is an old case, and we'll ask him to talk about that. But the other one, and I've given it a name, and it's the Stinking Garage Case. And why don't you tell us a little bit first, Rick, about the Stinking Garage Case?
Well, as with a lot of our cases, and I'm sure every time the Commonwealth attorneys come on and visit with everyone, they talk about drugs being involved in some way in their cases, and this one is no different. And I'd like to mention one thing. The last time I was on, which has been about a year ago, we had talked about, for some reason, Pike County did not have any methamphetamine cases here in eastern Kentucky, and we were very fortunate in that, but I just wanted to tell everybody that, unfortunately, meth has made its way into the mountains, and particularly here into our county. We've had 3 meth labs discovered in the last 2 weeks, which is more than we've had in the last 5 years. And I know another thing you've talked about down there is heroin, and heroin is here in the mountains as well. And we're really scared of that because of all the problems that come with that. But one of the things I think that happens to us is you guys are on the I-75 corridor there coming Florida, Tennessee, all the way up into Michigan. And see, we're about 2.5 hours away from that, but we're on what we call the U.S. 23 corridor, which is a direct road up to Michigan also. And so our drugs have been coming down through Ohio, through West Virginia, and so now we're getting quite a bit of heroin from Michigan and other areas up there, and we're just really scared of it, Ray. I know you guys have had it down there in Lexington now, the heroin of being following your overdoses and everything, and it's here. I've talked to our undercover people. We had a fellow last week that committed some crimes here in the county, and he said, first time I'd ever done heroin, I just lost my mind.
Sounds like a defense.
Well, that was what I said, too. If they make being on heroin a defense, well, then we can empty the jails out, maybe. But we're going to fight that, of course. And going back to the case that I do have here to talk about, it is related to drugs. The fellow's name that we ultimately indicted is William Johnny Sloan, and it involves the killing of Jonathan Looney in September 2011 here in Pike County. Now, Jonathan Looney had lived just across the border here. We border both West Virginia and Virginia, and Jonathan was a Virginia resident, but he had been
living... He's a foreigner.
Yeah, he come in, and that makes it hard a lot of times because we know the local people, and then we don't know the people that come in from across our borders. The police aren't as familiar with the Virginia residents or the West Virginia residents. And so Jonathan Looney slipped across the border and started living with William Johnny Sloan because he was dating William Johnny Sloan's daughter, Christina Sloan. And William Johnny Sloan is almost 60. His daughter is roughly 30, and Jonathan Looney was roughly 30. All three of them were living together there just across the Kentucky border in Pike County, and all three of them were selling drugs. And we know this because, unrelated to this murder, undercover officers had made drug buys from William Johnny Sloan and also from his daughter, Christina Sloan, out of this residence. So at the end of the month...
A family that deals together stays together.
Unless things go off the track, Ray, and right. I'm afraid that's what's happened with the Sloan family. As with a lot of drug dealers, competition developed. And in September 2011, Jonathan Looney disappeared. Now, William Johnny Sloan didn't report his disappearance. Christina Sloan didn't report her boyfriend's disappearance, even though they were all three living there together. But at the end of the month, or the first of the month, 1st of October, when Jonathan Looney didn't go to the post office in Virginia and pick up his check, Social Security disability check, his family got concerned and said, well, he always comes and gets his check. And so his family in Virginia reported him missing in Virginia. And the state police in Virginia got involved looking for him. Finally, they said, well, let's go down to Pike County and look. So they got the state police and the sheriff's department in Pike County, and they went out to this last residence and talked to William Johnny Sloan, talked to Christina Sloan, and said, has anybody seen Jonathan? And they said, well, no, he got in a car and left. Well, hooked on to their house is a little garage area, and we know from undercover drug buys that we later saw, that's where the drug dealing took place, was out in this little building. So the police, during their interview of William Johnny Sloan, stood out in the building and said, hey, you know, have you seen him? And they interviewed him, and no, we haven't seen him. He just left. And so the police said, okay, we'll come back. Police came back about a week or so later and following up on some leads, and they talked to him again, and they said, by the way, it kind of smells bad here in this garage. Smells like something dead. And Johnny told him, well, I've had trouble with rats here, and so I put out some decon and killed a lot of rats in here. And they said, okay. And so everyone left. Police kept looking for him and couldn't find him, kept talking to the family, and state police in Virginia were looking for him. And he hadn't shown up anywhere, and so they go back.
How long was he missing?
Well, it was probably got up to about 6 weeks at that point, I think. And there was rumors that Jonathan Looney had been selling drugs. Well, of course, you know, Ray, when that rumor comes out, and in fact it's pretty much confirmed, you develop a lot of suspects. You know, and if a guy's not doing anything bad, it's easy to narrow the suspects down. But when you're in a business like that, it could be a disappointed customer, could be a disappointed supplier. A lot of different things could happen.
Commonwealth's attorney Rick Bartley from Pike County is our guest this morning. We'll continue this case, find out about that stinking garage. Commonwealth's attorney Ray Larson here as well. I'm Scott Johnson sitting in for Jack Patty. It is American DA Live here on News Talk 590 WVLK. News Talk 590 WVLK. American DA Live on this Forensic Friday. Scott Johnson sitting in for Jack Patty. Commonwealth's attorney Ray Larson is with us, and our guest this hour, Commonwealth's attorney Rick Bartley from Pike County, talking about what Ray has called the case of the stinking garage.
Well, six weeks after Jonathan disappeared, Rick, and the garage is getting more and more, as they say, pungent. So tell me what happens.
Well, the investigation had continued, but everything kept pointing back to where Jonathan last disappeared. So the police focused on that again, and they had interviewed Johnny a time or two, William Johnny Sloan, and he said, look, I'm not a killer. I'm a drug dealer, but I'm not a killer. So they go back to his little garage area one last time, and when they go this time, they say that you can actually smell the odor of something dead from way outside the garage when they come up.
Yeah.
And so this time the police go in, they start interviewing him again, and they said, look, can let us in the garage there. And he said, no, it's locked and I don't have the key. And so they continue talking to him, and one of the officers said, hey, I just saw him kick something under the car. And so they get down, and sure enough, there's the keys to the garage. By this point, they've got Johnny arrested for the drug dealing that he's admitted to. They go get a search warrant, go in the garage, and the odor inside is just horrific. And they start moving around bed springs and stuff in the garage, and lo and behold, they find the body of Jonathan Looney, who they called Big John because he was about 6'3 and weighed over 300 pounds.
Wow.
So pretty hard to dig a hole like that.
Yeah.
And so they found the body there, a very small hole covered up with all kinds of debris. And, of course, by this time, the body was in a pretty bad state. But sent Jonathan's body down to the medical examiner, and they determined that his death was caused by a gunshot wound to the head. So they interviewed Johnny again. He said, look, I didn't do it. They interviewed the daughter, and she said, I didn't do it. And so the problem was we had a clear murder case. Because it was definitely not suicide from the angles and different things they talked about and the fact that he's covered up, you know. And so at that point, we did indict Johnny. And really the question or the big problem that developed was who killed him? Was it Johnny or was it his daughter, Christina? And Johnny started implying that it was her. And, of course, she started saying, I didn't have anything to do with it, so it must have been Daddy.
What a close family.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and again, that's so we continued looking, trying to make a determination who had done it. And the state police had made an undercover drug buy right about this same time, actually about 3 days after Johnny disappeared, or after Jonathan disappeared, from Christina Sloan, the daughter, Jonathan's girlfriend. And, of course, it was video recorded. And on that recording, and that's how we know, she said, the guy asked her that's buying the drugs undercover, hey, where's Big John? She said, I don't know. He just got in a car and left 2 or 3 days ago. And while he was buying some Oxycontin from Christina, she tells him, look, don't start buying drugs off of my daddy or don't try to buy drugs off of William Johnny. He will rip you off, won't give you a fair deal, and, you know, just buy them off of me. I'll give you a lot better deal.
Man, competition.
It's capitalism.
Yeah. In the house there. It's not like it's two neighbors competing. It's a daughter and her father. Well, we kept digging a little more, and we found out that Jonathan had also been selling drugs out of this house. All three of them were selling at the same time. But Jonathan had a prescription for Opana, and for anybody that knows their drugs very well, Opana is a very, very strong narcotic, actually even stronger than the Oxycontin that we hear about. So, and he was getting maybe $100 per pill for his drugs that he was selling out of the house. Poor Johnny was selling Loratabs or Oxycontin that he was only getting $10 and $15 for. So he told Jonathan he wanted to cut out of the deal. Look, you're getting all my customers, and I'm not doing any good. You're living here in my house. Jonathan told him no, and so Johnny shot him and killed him.
Okay, so here's what happens. First time he's indicted and he shows up in court, how does he appear in court?
Yeah, Johnny, again, I said he's a little less than 60 years old, and it's always kind of a funny thing when he comes in. Everybody says, how old do you think he is, you know? And he looks 65 or 70, but he's actually less than 55 right in there. But he comes in a wheelchair. He's kind of leaning over, blank stare in his face, and maybe even has an oxygen tank, I'm thinking. And his attorney says, Judge, I'm not sure that he's going to make it through our hearing here, much less to trial.
And he'd never been in a wheelchair. He'd never been like this before.
Oh, no, because we had him on tape where he was up there selling drugs. He was hopping around with no problem at all.
Well, wait a minute, Rick. Somebody dug that hole.
Well, they did because somebody had to move around this 350-pound man. We set a pretrial hearing, and I don't remember, 2 or 3 months off. Johnny's attorney comes in at the pretrial hearing 2 or 3 months after the initial appearance in court and says, well, Johnny's in a nursing home, and he's probably not going to live, and he can't make it to court, and let's just, you know, kind of continue this thing generally and until he passes away, maybe, and that'll be the end of this. And so we all said, well, that's real sad. That afternoon, I called the state police detective who was working the case, and I said, look, go up to this nursing home and check on Johnny. You know, give me a report. So he called me later, and he said, hey, I went up there. Johnny was out walking around in the yard smoking a cigarette. There was nothing wrong with him.
Sure
enough, we brought him back down here into court, and what we eventually ended up having to do, we did plead him to a manslaughter charge because I was a little worried. We did not have any forensics that definitely tied Johnny to the gun. For instance, we found a gun, but we couldn't match it up because the bullet was too mangled. So we couldn't do any DNA or fingerprints or the things that jurors like to see, frankly. And so we got a little worried that he would come in and say, look, my daughter did it. And they would say, yeah, she had just as much of a motive as he did. And we were a little bit worried we would lose the case, frankly. So we ended up pleading him to a manslaughter charge and recommended, and he has now been sentenced to 10 years in prison and is currently in the custody of the Department of Corrections. And it'll be interesting to see if he survives the 10 years because everyone thought and was represented that he wouldn't even survive to a hearing or a trial, but he's going strong.
Rick Bartley, Commonwealth's attorney from Pikeville, is our guest this morning. Commonwealth's attorney Ray Larson from here in Fayette County with us as well. It's American DA Live on this Friday morning on News Talk 590 WVLK. Got another case that we're going to go over with Rick coming up after the break right here on News Talk 590 WVLK. You know, one of those steamy sacks kind of film noir kind of things because this just sounds like a Black Dahlia kind of story.
Well, first of all, you're talking to Rick Bartley and Ray Larson, and we don't know what black noir means. the you showbiz types just kind of...
Oh, come on. You'd know it. It's dark. It's always night. Dick Powell is a tough detective. You know the kind of movie
I'm
talking about.
Yeah, my grandfather was telling me about Dick Powell. Rick? Are you still there?
I'm here.
All right. Well, first of all, you said something, or the announcer said something, that the Cruiser is doing community service. Now, when you say community service to us, that means he's...
it's like film noir. We don't know what it means.
He's kind of stepped in the poo-poo and is having to pay the price. Rick, you were telling me something about a case that just fascinated me the other day. And you called it the Torso Murder Case. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, that's right. And this case actually happened before I was even born. Started in 1953 here in Pike County, apparently. And recently we got one of the new judicial centers. And as a part of moving from one building over to the other, I had to go through literally hundreds of old files dating back into the 30s. And so I was skimming through them, and here was one of them labeled Torso Murder Case. Well, naturally, I had to pull that out and look at it, and it's a fascinating case. And even though it happened 60 years ago, I've actually heard about this case through the years from time to time here in Pike County, so it has kind of a history to it. And it is a classic whodunit with great characters in it, but it's all true. The case involved a fellow by the name of Clyde Jack Clements.
How come we got three names always in Pike County?
Well, now the fellow that was ultimately charged with killing him is Willard Catfish Dameron, so he must not have had a middle name, so they just stuck Catfish in that one for a third name. But Clyde Jack Clements apparently was from Tennessee and had rambled around the country, had served time in prison in Tennessee, and was reported to be a safecracker for the mob in Newport back in the 50s. That's what everybody said about him.
Now, let's talk. Stop a minute. I think back then Newport was really kind of...
it was a rough town back then.
Yeah, and when you say the mob, organized crime back, there were lots and lots of what they call strip clubs, that we've all heard about, maybe even read about. And you and a lot of people got hurt back there. So tell us more about this.
Well, it was apparently, and again, I've studied it and read about it. Apparently, organized crime had set up shop there pretty well, and Jack Clements was a safecracker for them. And just like you see, Scott, in the movies, the safecracker is usually a pretty good fella. He's got good clothes, and he's a kind of a dandy because he's a specialist. He's not a strong-arm criminal, you know. So, and that was Jack Clements. Somehow or another, and I don't know that, all the details.
Whoa. Now, tell me what's your definition of a dandy?
Well, what that is, he dressed nicely, always kept his hair combed nicely, was not your typical criminal that was out here. He was a pretty high-class-looking fellow when he rolled into your town.
Yeah.
For some reason, and I don't know all the details of this, I got the file out and read through it, but it's still got some holes in it. But anyway, he ended up in the Pike County Jail in 1953, and he was in there with a whole bunch of other guys. Well, I guess nothing else to do. They started playing cards for money, and they had no money in the jail. So Clyde, apparently, Jack ran up a pretty good debt and owed quite a bit of money to some of these people, including Willard Dameron. And so he said, look, I've got a bunch of money stored somewhere or hidden somewhere. If you'll bust me out of this jail, I'll pay you off. And so, sure enough, we had a Pike County jailbreak, and two or three or four guys ran out, including Clyde Jack Clements, and he was never seen again. So they investigated and tried to catch the guys, and they didn't. Well, jump ahead about 6 months then, over in a little town here called Johns Creek, on the other side of the mountain of Johns Creek, a dog out digging in a farmer's garden uncovered a body, or at least parts of a body. And the farmer goes out and looks, and sure enough, they find a partial body, and it's described as a body that was found with no head, no hands, and no feet. And so, obviously, there's your torso murder.
Now, let's go back. Let's go back to the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how in those days was law enforcement able to identify people?
Well, that was ended up being one of the big things in the trial, Ray. They could not identify them. They did not have the DNA or the kind of things that we have now scientifically. They just didn't have it. And so, actually, jumping way ahead, whenever they tried William Dameron, one of the times that they tried him, they brought William Dameron, as part of his defense, brought in a criminal who said, hey, I knew Jack Clements well, and actually I talked to him on the phone last week. I recognized his voice, implying that it was not him. Whoever was murdered, but it wasn't the guy they said. But so what they ended up doing was
I think we got to take a break.
Go ahead.
All right, we're going to find out how they identified that torso. Coming up, it's American DA Live. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson, Scott Johnson on this end, Rick Bartley from Pikeville, a Commonwealth Attorney in Pike County. Talk 590 WVLK. It is American DA Live. Scott Johnson in for Jack Patty. Fayette County Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson. Our guest this morning, Pike County Commonwealth Attorney Rick Bartley. And if you were a fan of The Sopranos, then the discovery of a body with no head, no hands, no feet is something that sounds awfully familiar, because that happened on The Sopranos, at least once that I can think of, and maybe more. But this was a case back in the 50s when there weren't the kinds of means of identification that we have today. And that's where we pick up and wrap up this edition of American DA Live with Rick Bartley. So they have found this torso back in the 50s. They think it's the safecracker, but how do they ever figure it out for sure?
Well, what they found in there included a pair of cheap eyeglasses and a red comb, and part of a brown suit. They brought in another inmate who said, oh, I knew Jack Clements. I served time with him. And he was always combing his hair. Always wanted his hair to look real good. Reminds me, talking about the movies again, of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And George Clooney's character, who was always putting the pomade on there.
He was a Dapper Dan man.
That was it, exactly. So Clements apparently all the time was combing his hair with a red comb, and sure enough, found in the shallow grave by the dog was this red comb. And that's mainly how they identified him, was by people saying, yes, I've seen that comb, and it's a red comb. It's very unique. And also they found parts of a brown suit that had a laundry tag in it. They went to the laundry, to the dry cleaner, and he said, oh, yes, I had picked up that suit at Willard Catfish Dammer's home sometime in about August of 53, cleaned it, and took it back, not to his home, but to a pool room that Dameron ran. And so they tied the suit into Dameron, and that was how they tried to do it. So it was low-tech witnesses. So Willard Catfish Dameron, who local bootlegger and pool room operator, was indicted and was tried. And Ray, you can appreciate this, as we were talking about longtime Pike County Commonwealth attorney John Paul Runyon. The case was actually prosecuted by John Paul's daddy, J.A. Runyon, who was the Commonwealth attorney here for a long time. So they tried Willard Catfish Dameron. Dameron took the stand and absolutely denied that he had killed anybody, and that whenever they escaped from jail, they all parted ways, and he had not seen Jack Clements since. Well, the jury hung. They could not agree. And so they came back.
Do you know
back.
What the count was?
No, I don't know. And from what I've tried to see, I couldn't really tell. I don't know, and that's a good question, Ray. Naturally, prosecutors think, did he have a ringer on there that just was 11-1, and he had somebody on there that wouldn't convict? I don't know. So what we do when we have a hung jury and they can't unanimously agree, they came back and tried him again a second time, and again they had a hung jury on this murder case. And it was very notorious, of course. Everyone knew about it. In fact, I have two employees here in my office that lived down in that area, and they said their mommies always told them, oh, don't cross Caney Mountain on Johns Creek. There's a man still out there looking for his head.
Huh.
And so it was an old ghost tale that everybody had heard about. So they tried him twice, hung jury both times, and they were going to try him again. And in the meantime, Willard Catfish Dameron got charged with an armed robbery. And from the time that they charged him, they tried him for the armed robbery before the third murder trial, and he was found guilty of the armed robbery, totally unrelated, but received a life sentence in prison. And so they never came back and tried him. So no one was ever convicted in the torso murder case.
Wow.
Don't ever go across Caney Mountain.
That's exactly right.
You got two or three movies on out of that one, I'll bet.
But everyone here in the office said, oh, yeah, Mommy always told us, don't cross over there. There's a guy looking for his head.
That's interesting.
Isn't that great? Yeah. That's a great legend,
yeah.
Folk tale,
oh, yeah.
And ghost story. Yeah. Well, when Rick told me about these cases, I said Rick is one of the great storytellers, he does a great job. So, any rate, Rick, we appreciate you being on. And
yeah, Rick, thank you so much. These have both been great cases and terrific stories.
Oh, it's always a lot of fun. I enjoy being with you guys.
You're the man.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Rick.
Rick Bartley, the Commonwealth's attorney from Pike County, joining us this morning on American DA Live. Oh, we got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. You think we can figure out how to fill that?
Sure.
Got big cases coming up?
Well, I want to tell you, on the 27th of September, a prosecutor from Maryland named Scott Patterson is going to talk to us about, it's the Dinner Theater murder case. That happened up there, and it's very interesting. It's drug related, but not the way you would think. There is some sort of a drug that anesthesiologists use to allow them, I'm told, to insert the ventilator so that during surgeries, then they have to just cause muscles to just quit working and relax so they can insert that, then they immediately reverse it. Well, this woman in Maryland learned about that, and she'd used that to kill her husband. And Scott Patterson, who's the prosecutor in Maryland, is going to be on the show on September 27th.
All right. We'll look forward to that. Jack will be back on Monday. Ray Larson, thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
Okay, Scott. Thanks.